आयुषम निर्णाम अंगा मार्त्यानाम रिथम इच्छितम इहो पाहुतो भगवान मृत्यु सामित्र खार्मणि। O Suta Goswami, there are those amongst men who desire freedom from death and get eternal life. They escape the slaughtering process by calling the controller of death Yamaraj. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living entity, as he develops from lower animal life to a higher human being and gradually to higher intelligence, becomes anxious to get free from the clutches of death. Modern scientists try to avoid death by physiochemical advancement of knowledge. But alas, the controller of death, Yamaraj, is so cruel that he does not spare even the very life of the scientist himself. The scientist who puts forward the theory of stopping death by advancement of scientific knowledge becomes himself a victim of death when he is called by Yamaraj. What to speak of stopping death? No one can enhance the short period of life even by a fraction of a moment. The only hope of suspending the cruel slaughtering process of Yamaraj is to call him to hear and chant the holy name of the Lord. Yamaraj is a great devotee of the Lord, and he likes to be invited to kirtans and sacrifices by the pure devotees who are constantly engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, the great sages, headed by Shonaka and others, invited Yamaraj to attend the sacrifice performed at Naimasharanya. This was good for those who did not want to die. Shonaka Rishi, on behalf of all of the great sages of Naimasharanya, is continuing his inquiries from Srila Suta Goswami, wanting to hear more and more about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. He has explained in previous verse that the devotees of the Lord are accustomed to licking up the honey available from the lotus feet of the Lord. What is the use of topics which simply waste one's valuable life? The nectarine topics discussing Krishna and pure devotional service to Krishna are like nectar. The traditional understanding of amrit is when you are in a terrible disease condition, or even in a dead condition. If you drink nectar, it revives your life, gives you tremendously strong health and great happiness. So similarly, in this material world, spiritually people are practically dead. And in this age of Kali Yuga, You can see it all around, what deathly existence people have spiritually. No real joy, no real spiritual understanding. So practically people are in a disease, dying or dead condition. But the nectar of the topics of Hari Katha will give one immortal life, health, and great happiness. And the power of this Krishna Katha is so great because it pleases Krishna and it pleases his devotees. And here they are explaining the process which takes place within this material creation. The superintendent of death is Yamaraj. It is Yamaraj who performs the slaughtering process for all living beings who are not engaged in devotional activities. It is Yamaraj who, by his incredible God-given supernatural powers, along with his associates, the Yamadutas, that calculate all one's sinful activities. And whatever irreligious activities we have performed is on his record, and they are not to be erased by any other type of activity. So therefore, at the time of death and during our life as well, we are obliged by his laws and the execution from his laws to take various births in various species of life and to suffer various types of miseries in those various species of life. And at the time of death, it is Yamaraj, actually, by his powers, that takes our soul and our subtle body away from this gross body, and then we have to come before his court for judgment, the Supreme Court. But we have already heard in previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, in this very same volume of the first canto, the nature of Yamaraj. Although he has this very, very thankless task of punishing the sinners, in his heart he is a very great devotee of the Lord. In his heart he is a Mahajan. He is one of the most exalted spiritual authorities in the path of bhakti. And Krishna wanted to reveal the inner mood and the sweetness of the love of Yamaraj. And therefore he arranged for him to be cursed by Manduka Muni to take birth in this world where he could just be himself. As Yamaraj, he cannot be himself. He has to play the role because he's a surrendered soul. A devotee of the Lord, according to the will of the Lord, is willing to take any position, to go anywhere. Narayana parasarave na kutashtina vibhyate swarga bavarga narakeshu apituliyartha darshana. A devotee is willing to go to hell or to go to heaven, it makes no difference to him, if that's where he can best serve the Supreme Lord. A devotee, according to the order of the spiritual master, is willing to do anything, anywhere, at any time. This is the sign of actual sincerity and Krishna consciousness, that we do not do any longer what we want, where we want, when we want, but we do what Krishna wants. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. The whole basis of Bhagavad Gita is this principle. Not to be attached to what you want, but to be attached to what Krishna wants. Arjuna had no inclination to fight. He had zero inclination to go before Bhishma or Drona or others. But Krishna told him that what is the use of what you want? You do what I want. That is religion. You surrender to me. All of your conceptions of religion, all of your conceptions of what is best for the society, all of your conceptions of what will you make you happy. Surrender. Do what I want. Know that I am the father of religion. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavad pralitam. What Krishna says is religion. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita teaches us, give up your own independent ideas of what's nice and accept what Krishna wants. This is the basic principle of spiritual life. Nowadays, people are very fond of discussing the gopis' relationships with Krishna and discussing very high rasika bhakti subjects. But what is that is postgraduate. The basic principle of Bhagavad Gita, Karapanya Doso Pahatasva Pava, the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, teaches us, give up all, every bit of your own free will to Krishna. Have we done that? That is the basics of real religion. So, Krishna has told Arjuna that we should surrender to his will. And that means to do even what you do not like to do. That is the test of love. To do what you like to do for someone else is a very low level of love. Because you'll do what you like to do even for someone you don't love. But to do what you would never do otherwise, simply for the satisfaction of your beloved, that is an expression of love. So in the beginning in Krishna consciousness, yes, do what you like and do it for Krishna. But as we make spiritual advancements, sometimes we are asked to do things we don't want to do, to go places we don't want to go. Huh? And that is a test. Are we doing it for love, or are we doing it because I like it, for my own sense gratification, in the name of God? This is what most religion today is. Our own sense gratification that we perform in the name of God, in the name of devotional service. No doubt, if it is with the blessings of great souls, we become purified by that process, but it is a very gradual process. It is a much higher level to ask, my dear Lord, how can I serve you? Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya. And Krishna says, this is why it is required to have guru, sadhu and shastra. So we know, what is it Krishna wants us to do practically? No doubt the scriptures are teaching us that we should surrender to Krishna, but if we have our way, we will just surrender according to our knowledge of the scriptures to do what we want, when we want, where we want it, and how we want it. But it's difficult when you have guru, because then he says, no, like this. And then you have to, then you're actually tested. Do I really want to surrender or not? So Yamaraj was the example of such a level of surrender. The most compassionate, wonderful person. He was asked by Lord Krishna that you simply associate with Yamadutas and punish the wicked and torture them and hear their cries and howls of pain. So he did it, dutifully, and he continues to do it. In fact, if you are not careful, he will do it to you. You will have first-hand experience. Many of you have already had first-hand experience, millions and millions and millions of times. But it is so painful that we don't want to remember, and therefore we forget. But through this curse of Manduka Muni, Krishna arranged that Yamaraj can be freed from his service, and you can say go on holiday for some time and just be what he wants to be. So he became Vidura. And as Vidura, he was the most gentle, he was the most humble, he spoke so sweetly, even the most wicked, cruel, sinful people, he didn't want any harm to come upon them. He was always their well-wisher. Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, he was always very gently trying to preach to them, to help them with such compassion, with such love, even though they were so sinful. He wanted to protect them. He knew what is ahead for such people. He had realization and experience. He wanted to protect them by preaching. He always wanted to associate with the Lord, and he always loved to serve his devotees. Throughout Vidura's wonderful Leela, we find what a wonderful devotee he was to Krishna as well as the Pandavas, the Vaishnavas. He was very simple. He was born in Shudra, from Shudra wife, mother, although son of Vedavyas. And he had endowed all very, very auspicious and good qualities. And he was constantly, always immersed in glorifying Krishna, in serving Krishna, in serving devotees, and in helping the fallen souls. He was a real preacher. And so this is the heart of Yamaraj. He loves to be in the satsanga Vaishnavas. He loves kirtan. He loves Krishna katha. And he loves to serve devotees, Vaishnav seva. This has been proven as Vidura. So here, Sonaka Rishi is saying that as long as we are chanting the holy names of the Lord and serving the Vaishnavas, then Yamaraj is so pleased with us, he will never hurt us. He will be very affectionate to us. He will become our dear friend. He's the servant of devotees. This was also tested in the story of the demise of Ajamil. Ajamil was a devotee, brahmachari, but somehow or other, due to bad association with a very materialistic woman, he lost all of his good qualities. He became demoniac. He began to perform every type of wicked, envious activity just to please his wife. Just see, if you associate with nice people, just to please, if you associate with Vaishnavas, if you have a nice devotee husband or a nice devotee wife or nice godbrothers and godsisters, then you in their association you want to please them. So to please them, you do all holy spiritual activities and you purify your life. But if you associate with people who are wicked, who are materialistic, who are addicted to sense gratification, then to please them, you have to perform wicked activities, and all whatever good qualities you have ever cultivated are practically lost from sight. So in this way, Ajamil became a criminal. And at the time of death, he called his son Narayan. The Vishnu Dutas came, the Yama Dutas came. But the Yama Dutas could not withstand the protection of the Vishnu Dutas. So they approached Yamaraj, and they were very upset. Because as far as they were concerned, Yamaraj was the supreme personality of Godhead. They had never seen anyone more powerful than Yamaraj. His punishment was the last word within this creation. So they were actually very confused. They had their faith was shaken. They were on the verge of suicide. This is how committed they were. We should be so committed as the Yamadutas. Because their faith was shaken in Yamaraj, being the highest authority, they had such faith that doubt was eating their minds to such an extent that they were actually on the verge of committing suicide. They couldn't live with it. So they approached Yamaraj, explained what had happened. And again, Yamaraj revealed his heart of hearts. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, we find in many cases Yamaraj is revealing his inner consciousness. And he explained that neither myself or Brahma or Shiva, none of us are supreme. We are all the servants of Narayan. Narayan is supreme. I am eternally his humble servant, and you are also eternally his humble servants. But greater than being a servant of Narayan is being a servant of Narayan, because they are so pleasing to Narayan. Anyone who even once sincerely takes the name of Lord Krishna in his mouth, he said, don't ever go near that person. Anybody who ever bows his head to the Lord or the Vaishnavas with sincerity or engages in the process of devotional service, I warn you and I warn you now, do not even look in their direction, my dear Yamadutas. And I will tell you why, because these devotees are so dear to Krishna. Lord Narayan with his club is always protecting his devotees. And if you go anywhere near them to harm them, you will be destroyed by the club of Narayan himself. So Yamaraj revealed that he was always the servant of the Vaishnavas. And the Vaishnavas are beyond Yamaraj and beyond the Yamadutas. In fact, the great Vaishnavas are worshipped by Yamaraj. That is his natural humble condition. So here it is described so nicely that as long as Yamaraj is here at this Krishna Katha, none of us will ever have to be slaughtered by the process that he has been commissioned to execute in this world. But others, no matter what they do, no matter how they do it, they cannot escape the punishment of death that Yamaraj inflicts. And Srila Prabhupada explained so nicely, the scientists, they are constantly, it is their ultimate goal of all materialistic, atheistic science, is to somehow or other prolong life and eventually find the solution to death. And they are coming up with their theories and making their promises. But, as Srila Prabhupada describes in this purport, the scientists themselves are dragged away by Yamaraj. So why should we take so serious their promises and their theories? There is no way to escape. Prabhupada explains the story of Savitri and Satyavan. Yes? And she was a very chaste young lady. And she wanted to marry this man. And they consulted horoscope. Sometimes in India people do like this. They consult horoscopes. And of course in those days astrologers actually knew what they were talking about. They could be trusted. These days sometimes they know, sometimes they don't. Basically, astrologers these days are quite confused people. And the evidence is you will never get two that say the same thing. So, unless you ask them when they're sitting in the room together. But if you ask them separately, they always give different reports. But in those days, astrology was a science that people actually had the brain substance to really go into properly. So they explained that you should not marry this man, because if you do, he will die immediately after. But of course, she loved him, and he loved her, and Prabhupada says, love is blind. So they married. And after they married, guess what happened? He died. So Yamaraj came to take him away. And she was thinking that Yamaraj is actually a nice devotee. I have to somehow or other appeal to that side of him. So she was a very nice lady. She worshipped him and she served him. She greeted him with such affection and such devotion. She was Vaishnava Seva. And Yamaraj was very, very pleased with her. And he said, I will give you any benediction you want except one. You cannot ask for your husband to live, because he is destined to go away from this body. So I will not give you that, but any other benediction I will give you. So she was a very intelligent young lady. She said, give me the benediction that I have a son. And Yamaraj said, so be it, you will have a son. And then he picked up the body of the husband, Satyavan, and began to walk away. And she said, Yamarajji, how am I supposed to have a son without my husband? You know, without him, I have to do the sati and all of these other things. I cannot have another husband. So I require my husband to have a son. So Yamaraj, who is a great Mahajan, that means deepest thinker, he could not think of anything at that time. Prabhupada said he was defeated. He was defeated by her love. He was defeated by her devotion. So he said, all right, you have your husband back. We will make exception. And he lived, and they had son. So it is only through devotion that we can overcome the powers of Yamaraj. There's no other way. And Prabhupada explains in the same lecture that he tells a story about other ways people try to overcome, but they never succeed. He said, here in America, people are very attached to this running. Jogging, it is called. Even in India, we have seen people are doing this jogging. It's no doubt it's good for health, but it will not prolong your life. He said, they are thinking if they run very fast, they will escape Yamaraj. But they all go to Yamaraj. It's a fact. Recently, there was a person who made jogging famous. He wrote a book about the benefits of jogging. And because of this book, all over the world, people are jogging. You know what is jogging? Running every morning in the nice fresh air and in the evenings. Everywhere we see. And he made this popular. Some years ago, nobody was doing this. Well, some people, but it wasn't so fashionable. But this man's book made it world famous, popular activity. Everyone jogging, jogging, jogging. And he was considered the guru of joggers. And he was on television shows and radio shows and books and more books and newspapers and magazines. And he would jog and everyone would be very much offering their respects to him. So he caused a craze throughout the world, good health through jogging, long life through jogging. Anyways, we have to reveal the facts of life, that very recently, as he was jogging, he had a heart attack and died. So he was running from Yamaraj, but Yamaraj caught up with him. Actually, I will tell you the illusion. They think they're running from Yamaraj, but actually they're running toward Yamaraj. They're thinking Yamaraj is behind them, and the more they run, the farther they will go and the longer their life. But actually, Yamaraj is not only behind, but he's also in front, waiting. And the faster you run, the sooner you get to him. He explained another person. He compared these people to the modern scientists. They're trying to make their material arrangements to escape death. So this person was thinking that Yamaraj is a gentleman. He's a Vaishnav. Therefore, he's very pavitra. He's very pure. Juta, ajuta. He doesn't get near impure things. So therefore, every morning I will cover my body with human stool from head to toes. And I will smell so bad that Yamaraj will never want to come anywhere near me. So he covered his body with human stools. Day and night he kept like this. This is what people do, just to go on living in these temporary material bodies. But anyways, Prabhupada said his whole life was completely useless, covered with stool. And then ultimately, when the moment of his destined time to die came, Yamaraj took him away. Stool or no stool, he was taken away. So we can manufacture so many of our own ideas of how to overcome death, how to increase our life. But we should know that there is only one way, and that is through bhakti. And that bhakti begins by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In fact, when we have kirtan, sometimes Yamaraj dances with us. No doubt, he loves when devotees have kirtan. This was proven also in Lord Chaitanya's Leela. Jagai and Madhai were the biggest sinners on earth. They had the longest record of sins of anyone in the universe at the time. There was no sins that they did not commit. They were actually Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana Kumbhakarna, Dantavaka Shishupal, who came again in this age of Kali. It was like a bonus birth as demons that they took, voluntarily, because they wanted the mercy of Sri Gauranga and Nityananda Prabhu. So when Lord Chaitanya delivered them, just to show that they were free of all sins, all of their sins entered the body of Lord Chaitanya, and his beautiful, fair, golden complexion became black. And devotees became very afraid. What type of sins could do this to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And Lord Chaitanya said, the only thing that will drive these sins out from me is the loud chanting of the holy name. So everyone began kirtan. And then they all began kirtan, and all the blackness came, all of the blackness of the sins of Jagai and Madhai came out of his body, and he became golden again. And then Lord Chaitanya revealed a very important truth. He said, these sins have to go somewhere. Where did they go? Wherever people are offending Vaishnavas, that's where all these sins will go, into their hearts. And when after Jagai and Madhai became very humble Vaishnavas, like so humble, just bowing down and tears of love in their eyes as they were serving the devotees, always apologizing to everyone for everything they had ever done, knowing or unknowing. The demigods all came down to glorify Lord Chaitanya because he had done what no other incarnation has ever done. instead of killing the worst demons, he made them into humble, sincere servants of the Vaishnavas. So the demigods were coming, and they were having kirtan to the holy names of Lord Gauranga. And Yamaraj himself came down to see what was happening. And Yamaraj asked his secretary, Chitragupta, he said, What is the extent of the sins of Yamaraj, of Jagai and Madhai? They said, very difficult for us to tell you like this. That we have scribes who are noting each sin as they are performing it. We have a whole department just for Jagai and Madhai. And their hands are so tired, they cannot write fast enough. And there's so many pages that it's taking up a major portion of our abode. There's no end. We cannot, all your scribes cannot keep up with these sins that they're committing with their records. That is to the extent. These are the most sinful men who have ever lived. And now they will become humble servants of the Vaishnavas by Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And when Yamaraj heard that, he became so overwhelmed with love for Lord Chaitanya for giving these people love of God, which is actually what he wants everyone to have. He actually fell unconscious. He was overwhelmed. He was too much amazed by the mercy of the Lord. And as he lay there unconscious, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and others, they came and they asked the Chitragupta, what happened to Yamaraj? Why he's unconscious? We're all having kirtan festival. He explained, because this is the extent of the sins of Jagai and Madhai, and he's so much overwhelmed by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So at that time they all began chanting so much. Even Indra, upon seeing the beauty of Lord Chaitanya, he began to offer his respectful obeisances to Gautama Muni, thinking, what a wonderful gift he gave me by giving me thousands of eyes all over my body. I thought it was a curse. You know, Indra had some lila with his wife, Ahalya. Yes? And Gautama Muni wanted to teach good lesson, so he made Ahalya a piece of stone, and he made Indra have female organs all over his body because he was so attached to these things. So that was very embarrassing. He said, please take this away. He said, all right, then I will cover you with eyes. Now, how would you like eyes in every part of your body? Very difficult. So it's a curse. But great devotees like Gautama Rishi, their curses are always for your good, even when it appears bad. Ultimately, Ahalya was touched by the lotus feet of Ram, and by the touch of his feet she became a pure devotee and came back to her original self. And Indra, when he was seeing Lord Chaitanya, all of his thousands of eyes were looking at Lord Chaitanya without blinking. He was just drinking in the beauty through all of his eyes. And he was thinking, Gautama Muni is very nice. He has given me not just two, but so many eyes to drink the nectar of Gauranga. And he was dancing in ecstasy. And Shiva was dancing in ecstasy. And Brahma was chanting in ecstasy. Everyone was chanting in ecstasy. And Yamaraj, when he heard the loud chanting of the holy names, Krishna, also began to dance in ecstasy. And what kind of ecstasy? He was dancing completely like a madman. His limbs were going here and there. He was dancing in complete abandon of any social position. Actually, in this universe, he's the Supreme Court Justice. That's usually a very sober and distinguished position. When he's in the court of Yamaraj with the Yamadutas, he's very grave. "You take birth as a chicken. You take birth as a frog. You die." Very grave. Everyone comes before Yamaraj like, "Please, be lenient with me, Your Honor. You were not lenient with that cow you ate. You take birth in hell." No leniency from Yamaraj. He's very grave. But when he's amongst the Vaishnavas in Kirtan, he's something else. He completely abandoned all and was just dancing and dancing and dancing, and tears were flying from his eyes like rain, and his limbs were trembling, his hair was scattered, and he was just so happy in bliss, chanting the names of Gauranga and the holy Maha Mantra. Yamaraj is very happy with all of you. Yamaraj Mahajan ki. Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. Nityananda Prabhu ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, Yamadutas, they are being the servants of Yamaraj, who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Do they not recognize the supremacy of Lord Vishnu? If they are serving the pure devotee of the Lord, they should also know the Supreme Lord Vishnu.
That is your opinion. Yesterday was Govinda's birthday. Everyone should say Hari Bol. Give him your blessings. 27 years old. So, your opinion is not correct, because Lord Shiva is also a pure devotee of the Lord. Many of the demigods are also pure devotees of the Lord. But their servants and devotees approach them for material benedictions. And he just takes the role of fulfilling their material benedictions. Shiva's Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. He's the greatest of all Vaishnavas. But most of the Shivites don't recognize Krishna as God. Many of his devotees are bhutas, ghosts, ghouls, hobgoblins. They just terrorize people. Ravana was devotee of Shiva. Did he surrender to Ram? Shiva surrenders to Ram. He's always chanting the name of Ram. in the Manikarnika Ghat in Varanasi, the city of Shiva, anyone who dies in that place, Lord Shiva personally whispers the name of Ram in their ear. That is the devotion of Shiva. But his followers do not understand that. Because in the role, in the function of a demigod, he simply is worshipped by them for their material purposes. Most of the worshippers of the demigods do not understand anything but their demigod as the supreme who's supplying their material benedictions. So that is the case with many of the Yamadutas. According to their karma, they worship Yamaraj. He fulfills their material desires and they do their work for him. In the role of a demigod, he does not reveal his Vaishnav side to them. That is something that is more or less kept within his heart. And of course, his service is done in surrender. But it is to facilitate Krishna.
Maharaj, you said that when people perform sinful activities, it's Yamaraj who ordains the kind of punishment that they deserve. So Maharaj, does that mean that Yamaraj is actually indirectly in charge of karma as well?
He is in charge of executing the results of karma at the point of death, yes.
And it also means that when a person takes up to devotional service, Krishna actually interferes in that that law, and therefore, you know, sees to it that the devotee's karma is all negated.
Mahatmanastu mam bharata daivim prakriti mashyata. When we surrender to Krishna with a sincere heart, even in a neophyte level, Krishna reciprocates, because we are doing it under the guidance of his devotee, his dearly beloved devotees. He personally intervenes, and then he will personally. It is no longer the same karma may come to you that you deserve, but it's administered by Krishna. The laws of material nature directly. And therefore, it's meant for your purification rather than for your punishment. But it is said here in this verse that when devotees take advantage of this process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in kirtan and pravachan, then Yamaraj, he becomes very pleased. He will not hurt such devotees. Yes.
Maharaj, is it true that Yamaraj has jurisdiction only over the human form of life?
No, because the animal species, they do not have to come before Yamaraj because they are not incurring any future sins. The animals cannot make sins. They are just living. They are just living what Yamaraj has already given them. Just like a judge may send you to jail. And then you're under a warden, not directly under the judge, but he sent you there. So it's Yamaraj who makes the analysis of what species of life you should be cast into. And if you go into the lower species, then you're no longer being judged. You're just living the sentence and enduring the punishments from your previous judgment that he has made. But then when you come back to the human life, then if you do not become devotee, then again you will be judged. and where you go, you do not know. Does that answer your question? So the lower species have already been judged by Yamaraj and his representatives, and they are undergoing the reaction to that judgment. Yes.
Maharaj, according to one's sinful activity, one is transferred to a particular type of hell and is given punishment according to his sinful activity. Mm. But again, the punishment is finished. He has given another birth, another body. According to his consciousness at the time of death, he enters into another body. Before he enters into another body, he is taken to hell and he suffered. So when he has given another body, he forgets his past life, even forgets the memories in hell. The question was asked to me, why then all punishments are given? If he is going to forget, so what is the purpose?
Because the impressions remain. If you were to remember all those things, you would not be able to survive. You would be in too much anxiety. It's like sometimes when a person is a child, they are abused in some way or they have some horror, and it just, their whole life is ruined because of that. That's just one little incident. Huh? Can you imagine if you were to remember, if you could remember everything you went through in hell, you would be completely insane and crazy and mad. You wouldn't be able to exist. So therefore, in this human form of life, Krishna wants to give you an independent... The impressions are there. And the knowledge is there of what happened. If you just listen to the scriptures and listen to the sadhus, you know what's been happening. You know what you've been through. You know what you will be through. So you'll stop your activities. So the impressions are there within our subconsciousness, and also the information is there. But for you to remember all those things, it would be unbearable. You could not live. And this is Krishna's plan, which is perfect. Somehow or other, you are not Krishna. So your ideas and your opinions and all those people who are asking you questions are imperfect. But Krishna's plan on how to deliver all conditioned souls is perfect. He gives us our independence. He gives us knowledge. He comes and explains. He shows us so much suffering. He tells us what kind of other sufferings. And we have full facility to surrender to him through that. But if we knew all these other things, we couldn't do anything. The whole world would just be crazy in total torment of the thoughts of all they've been through. Huh? It'd be very difficult even to practice Krishna consciousness. In the hellish planets, while you're suffering, it's so tragic and so severe. People don't become Krishna conscious there. They just suffer. And the remembrance of the suffering is as bad as the suffering. So when you come here, Krishna wants to give you a chance to be Krishna conscious. So to a large extent, one extent or another, he relieves that, and he relieves the memory of all that. But he tells you what is what, and he gives you full chance to chant the holy names of Krishna.
Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Hare
Rama. I know one devotee. His name was Mahamantra Das, not the one that you know from India. Prabhupada had several disciples named Mahamantra Das. He lived at New Vrindavan for some time, early 70s. He was actually very, very strict in his sadhana.
is up early chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Very big person, big strong person. And he would work very hard. He was always memorizing slokas. He's a brahmachari. He lived up in the brahmachari ashram. He was always memorizing slokas. He knew so many slokas. He was very scholarly in his own way, but very staunch chanting. And somehow or other, he fell into illusion by Krishna's arrangement and by his misuse of independence. And he left and he dove deep into the ocean of material activities. And he just went deeper and deeper and deeper. And every now and then we'd hear some report. And what he was doing was terrible. He was engaging in very, very sinful activities, materialistic activities. And he was like that for years. And then what happened is because Srila Prabhupada, in those days, he was in the process of writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So one volume of one canto would come out at a time. It's not like now. Those days, it was very exciting. Now you just get the whole set, right? You go to Shamananda Prabhu and say, I want a set of Bhagavatams. And you give him some Lakshmi, he gives you the set. And then you have them all there, and you could take anyone you want at any time. But in those days, when I first became a devotee, there was only the first canto, which he wrote in India, and then there was these little paperback second cantos of one chapter at a time, and they'd come out every couple months. What to speak of 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. The most you could get is just one. You'd have to wait for months to one little paperback volume of one of the Lord in the Heart or the process of God realization would just come out and you'd read it. Ah, very nice, very nice. Then the next volume would come out, then the next. Every few months some volume would be coming out and everyone would be anxious to read Prabhupada's latest volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. So somehow or other, while his illusion somewhere in upstate Ohio, the fifth canto came out. And this man was educated. He would read. He could read a whole book in a night. He would just read it. He would just like... His brother was also a devotee. And he was living at New Vrindavan. And he was a brahmachari, his brother. So when the fifth canto came out, he mailed it to him, to his brother, as a gift. Ah, such a nice gift. And he sat there, and one night he just read through the entire fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the next morning he was in the brahmachari ashram. And he was learning slokas and chanting Mahamantra Hare Krishna Hare Krishna. Very intense, very staunch. When he read the descriptions of the hellish planets, he understood. As he was reading, he was thinking, I have done this. I have done this. I have done this. I've done almost everything. So he decided that it is a much more reasonable life to surrender to Krishna. So, this is intelligence. You hear about it, you understand, and then you take to Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much.